You're listening to a Broadmoor Podcast production.
This week, Pastor Josh continued our series through the book of Esther and preached from chapters 4 and 5. In this episode, we talk about the picture we see of Mordecai when he expresses his grief over Haman's plot to annihilate the Jews. Yet, he was confident in God's promise to provide deliverance. What does this say about how we might come to God with a full range of emotions and yet still trust in His faithfulness? Also, are all of God's promises meant to be interpreted and applied to each of us as individuals? Or do some apply only to His collective people? What difference does this make? We cover a lot of ground today, but I think you'll hear some very practical and thought-provoking conversation. Thanks for joining. This is After the Message. Hey guys, welcome to the podcast today. Thank you, Chase.
Hey, Mike. All right.
Hey, Mike H.
Mike H.
Word's getting around.
The people love Mike H.
So I hear.
The people love him.
Beth has started this new nickname.
And I see a clothing brand coming.
Mike H.
I do. I see all, tennis shoes, all the things. All the things.
It's kind of your rapper name.
Mike H.
It doesn't sound like much of a rapper name. Anyway, everybody doing okay today? Let's change the subject.
Doing good. Yeah, great.
Good.
Yes.
Good.
Fantastic. Lovely.
Well, okay.
Wonderful.
So, I'm a little congested today, so I can breathe, but it's kind of, you know, if I sound a little odd, there's a reason for it. But I did after service yesterday. I went home and I got in the bed and I finally made a virtual doctor's visit.
Okay.
And yeah.
Yeah, that's free with our insurance.
It is.
Yeah.
You know, what's really weird about it though is like you I was talking to some doctor. I'm here on a Zoom with a doctor in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And he's great, but yeah.
It kind of feels a little odd.
It's like I've never met this guy. He's never met me.
He's never met you. What did he prescribe?
Let us in. Wow. Ignore all the HIPAA laws.
That's
his medicine.
Like, how does he check your heart rate? Does he get you to stick your phone on your chest?
Did you open your mouth to let him see your tonsils?
No.
Okay.
You didn't do that.
I've got questions.
Yeah. And no to the heart thing either. We just talked about my symptoms and he could obviously, like, he could see it and hear it. Mm-hmm. He got me on an antibiotic and actually something that would help with the congestion because what I was taking wasn't working all that well.
Gotcha.
So, I feel a lot better today. Good. We'll see how long it lasts, but,
glad you can bring
Your voice was kind of cool yesterday leading worship.
Was it
kind of sultry?
Yeah. Well, it was just sort of. Fortuitous that we had planned all the songs.
Medication's working. Like
Salvific is going to make a way in today. It's coming.
So we had planned all the songs in lower keys. Ah. And so it was really helpful to me. I didn't know I was going to be sick, obviously, but thankfully I didn't have to sing.
It was helpful to me, too. Right. I wasn't sick.
Esther, the story, a story of our sovereign God.
Yeah, that's
God
right.
Knew.
That's right.
He knew.
That's right.
Not just in Esther's life, but yours.
I got a question, though, about Abide, the song yesterday.
Yes.
Tell me something about where to find it. I mean, I loved it,
good.
And I want to listen to it. And who released it? Is that the right word? Or?
Well, the version that we did yesterday was by the Worship Initiative.
Great.
I think it was Shane and Shane recorded it. But the song didn't originate with them. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of the original. I want to say
it was it Matt Papa? That crew?
I don't think so. Not. Chase is looking it up. He'll tell us in a moment.
Watch it be the Gaithers. It's going to be great.
Could be.
No, I'm pretty confident it's not the Gaithers. I want to say it's for like Sovereign Grace or City of Light or something like that.
I love them. You got to love all those guys.
I can't remember for sure.
City of Light, Sovereign Grace.
I love the song.
So.
Chase is almost there.
Chase, reach for the mic. What's it going to be?
I don't know yet.
He's double checking.
Who is Aaron Williams?
Is this a Jeopardy question? Who is
Aaron Williams for 100 place?
Yeah.
Anyway, so while he's figuring that out, we'll make all the introductions. So today, if you're listening, and we are glad that you're listening, we've got in the room today Sean Selman, Josh Braddy,
Yay.
Preston Crowe, Beth Bowman,
yes,
and then Chase Hammock. And so, it's going to be a good conversation today, I hope. So, hey, before we jump into anything, because, we're of course, third week into the Esther series, we began the message yesterday with something that I think is really important in the life of our church. We've been talking about it for several weeks, and the big moment is coming up this coming Sunday. So we're recording this on Monday. This weekend, we are having a one-day offering to pay off the new purchase of the new CHH, Center for Hope and Healing, facility. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, it would be good for us to just spend a few minutes talking about that and the importance of it as we sit here. And Preston, I mean, Center for Hope and Healing, like that's your baby.
That's one of the joys that I have of working here at Broadmoor. I'm the director of the center, and it has been around a little over 10 years. I've been here for 10 years this past summer. And one of the first things we did after I got here was look for some space outside of the building. At that point, we had a few counselors that were meeting inside of Broadmoor, but there really just isn't good space inside of our current facility to do it. And so we began looking for some off-campus space and found some that's close by, so still very connected to the church, but provides a little more confidentiality and anonymity, which was great. So we've been in that building, leasing that for 10 years, and had expanded within that building one time, but had really reached a point where we needed even more space. Our numbers of counseling sessions just continue to grow. And one of the very cool things over the last 10 years is that we have said over and over again, you've heard Josh say it lots of times, that we want to run to the hurting, and part of that is reaching our community. And over the last 10 years, we've seen now about 70% of our clients come from outside of Broadmoor.
Wow.
And so though we certainly welcome and love it when our Broadmoor people come and take advantage of that that ministry, we really love it as well when people outside of Broadmoor can step in. And for many of them, that's an entry point to the church where they're not quite sure about the whole church thing or not quite sure about Broadmoor. Maybe it's a bigger church and they came from a smaller church or whatever. But it's an inroad for a lot of them, and so it gives us lots and lots of opportunity. It's always that it's kind of hard to talk about in some ways because we want more people to come, which sounds like we're almost asking for people to go through hard things.
Yeah.
But the reality is we know people are going through hard things. Yeah. I mean, we don't have to go very far in our own lives. We're going through hard things. In our church body, we're going through hard things. Definitely in our community, we are. So the goal is not we want more people to come because we want more people to hurt. We know they're hurting. Yeah. We just want them to find a place that they can go and work through that. And so we needed more space for all of that. And then as we launched our shelter ministry, we also need some unique space for some of the things that we want to do within that. For those who don't know, our shelter ministry involves foster care and adoption, but also involves working with people who maybe find out they're pregnant unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. And are in kind of that crisis moment of what do we do, as well as people who abortion is part of their story. And maybe they've never opened up and shared that with anyone, but they're ready to begin that healing journey. And so we are very excited about all, not just the building itself. The building is a tool, but we are excited about the ministry that we'll be able to hold within that building.
Yeah. And the great thing about this space is that it's much larger than the space that you guys are vacating.
Yes.
And has, has more than enough space to house both the counseling center
both
and
ministries.
Shelter ministry.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And maybe
that's
even right. Some space for future things. But
that's right. And it's close by. It literally, if you walk out of the back parking lot of our current building, you can walk into the back parking lot of the new building.
Yeah.
So we kept it as close to Broadmoor and really as close to our current location as we could.
So it's on a different street in a different development, but it's like
kind of secluded, not really a thoroughfare, not a lot of cars driving through there. So
yeah.
better location in that respect.
So we purchased it, a couple of months ago now, I guess? And and we are at least planning for renovations. Mm-hmm. And have we actually started any of the renovations yet?
We haven't started. Okay. We have an architect that's working through what the renovations will look like, and then we'll get going on it.
So, but still thinking that we would move into it, or you mm-hmm. would start utilizing that space in like July,
kind
August.
Of end of July, yeah. probably mid-August is a more likely move-in date.
So that's exciting. That's exciting. Yep.
I can't wait. I'm excited. Mm-hmm.
So all that said, so we already own the building, mm-hmm. A year or two ago, we paid off all of our debt. And mm-hmm. so at the moment, up until we purchased that building, the church was debt-free.
Right.
And so what we're trying to do is see if we can remain debt-free.
That's right.
Right.
And so this Sunday, April 28th, we are having a one-day offering. And the goal is to pay off that facility completely. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, it's about $1.8 million that we want to raise. And mm-hmm. so in addition to our regular tithes and offering, we're asking people to do what, Josh?
Yeah, so number one, to give. Yeah. but ultimately, we want them to give cheerfully. And I want to reiterate what I hopefully communicated yesterday. We're not twisting anybody's arm here. Mm-hmm. This isn't a everybody has to or even a guilt of everybody should. I think this is something cool God's doing. We have a great opportunity to be a part of it. It's mm-hmm. going to be kind of what we talk about in this chapter of Esther. And even as the two storylines came together, I found myself yesterday not wanting to blur the two lines.
Yeah,
I didn't want to get to the end of the service and say, and see, just like Esther, you need to give and you can be,
because part of it.
It seems a little bit of a cheapening or using something that is a sound biblical foundation for something else. All that to say, CHH is an incredible ministry. This building is going to be an awesome tool. So we want you to give. We gave maybe a handle for mm-hmm. you to consider. And it would be this. If you are going to give one day of your life to the CHH initiative, the work, all the things. So take one day out of your year. So imagine yourself, if you're an hourly employee or a salaried employee, if you're an hourly employee, you know what you already make. Okay. So take one whole day of work. If you work 4 hours that day, if you work 8 hours that day, 12 hours that day, whatever it is, that you're going to set aside the money you make in that day, and you're going to give that to pay down the debt of CHH. But not only are you going to give each hour of that day, you pick the day, and you're going to spend that day praying specifically for CHH, praying for shelter, praying for the people that you know that may not have a connection to a counseling ministry yet, mm-hmm. but maybe they could. Mm-hmm. And so you're praying that whole day. So you're leveraging not just the ask isn't just money. The ask is prayer support to come mm-hmm. alongside.
Yes.
And so that's helpful. But then this is where I got nervous, but I think it ended up being the right math. I'm not quite sure yet. I'm sure Emily will tell me in our meeting.
I saw you being nervous with that.
I was really nervous because I walked into it. I was like, I don't know if that's right. So if you are a salaried employee, you don't necessarily make an hourly wage, although you could figure it out. And the way that would work is 2080. That would be the hours that you would work in a year. And so you have that 2080 and you take your salary, divide it by 2080, and that should be what you make per hour. And then you take that per hour and how many ever hours you work in that day. Then so you're just going to multiply that by, let's say you worked an 8 hour day or a 10 hour day, multiply that by 8 or 10. And then that's what you're going to give on that Sunday.
Yeah.
But you can certainly give more.
Yes.
That's right. Absolutely.
Or less.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. we had the question on Sunday when the offering was going to be taken up. So I just want to prepare our people. So it's the regular offering will be taken up at the regular offering time. And then as you leave, isn't this right? That was the plan.
That's right. Mike doesn't know this yet because he wasn't a part of deacon's meeting.
Surprise.
But somebody did ask the question. And I did give the caveat without talking to the people who need to know, which is Mike and
this
his
could
team.
Change.
We're not going to take them up together.
Okay.
That it will be a separate time of offering, which I would assume would be towards the end of our service.
Yeah.
Unless Mike says, but we've already planned something and you're not right. What do you
think,
Mike?
That's what I get for going home and getting in the bed.
And calling the doctor and getting virtual call.
Yeah.
I want to throw this out too. So I looked up on the website. So if you're not going to be here Sunday mm-hmm. and you love CHH the way I love CHH, because it's what a great ministry. At One Day Offering, you can, on the website, you can go and under the fund, click down to One Day Offering and give your amount.
That's exactly right.
Yes. Right, yep. There online, yep. People.
So we do, yes, we did pass out yesterday offering envelopes that, yes, are actually printed with One Day Offering, which are as much reminders.
That's right.
To pray, as much as they are, you know, to be used for the offering. But you can actually write a check or put your offering in the envelope and submit it that way. Or you can go online, of course, and give digitally.
Yes.
I want to reiterate, you know, like the one day's salary is a great starting place for you to just figure out, hey, what's something that I could give?
Right.
But like, you know, for us, as Lori and I looked at it and talked about it, it's like, you know, I think we have God, by God's grace, we have the ability to give more than a day's salary. And so, you know, I think the key is be prayerful.
That's right.
In what you give.
Yep.
And whatever God leads toward, do that.
Absolutely.
And,
hey, I'm going to make another – hey, if you're a parent, encourage your kids to be a part of this as well.
I love that.
And so don't just think, oh, well, hey, my kids don't – or if you're a teenager and listening, don't think, well, I don't have a job or – hey, think about what you might be able to give. I mean, so I think the cool thing about offerings like this, if we enter into it through prayer and, as you said, cheerful giving, then at the end, we get to see a work that God does, not because of some big gift, but because of a collective gift.
That's everybody working together.
And so so even if you're a kid or a teenager, what you give matters.
That's right.
And so think about what you might want to give toward this as well. Mm-hmm. And God will take all those things. If we do it prayerfully and cheerfully, God will take those things and do an incredible work.
So that's right.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So we're excited about that. Segue, if ever there was someone that may have needed some grief counseling. we look at Mordecai
there
in the book of Esther.
Yeah,
so
he needed it.
So we saw
what
in
a segue. That was great. So good.
Yeah, that was
in
a good
the
one.
Go, Mike,
in the story this week, we see so all the Jews are gonna, I mean, essentially, they've set aside a day. Hey, we're going to wipe out all the Jews,
right?
And Mordecai, like he's like grief stricken and like in just distress. And we see this picture of him tearing his clothes, sitting in ashes, and So I think one of the things we talked about now this is kind of a thing that's kind of foreign to us.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe some people have the urge to tear their clothes and stuff when they're like upset and grief stricken. But I think you did a good job, Josh, just talking about like culturally, like this was pretty normal, right?
For them. Yeah, certainly. And I would say, and you know, Preston, our resident counselor in the room today, we all have our own unique cultural ways of grieving. Mm-hmm. I think one of the ways, that we would see, particularly in this setting, in Persia, but particularly, I think it was just kind of that time frame of culture. Like, if you lost something or somebody had died and it maybe things had burned down or there was nothing left but shambles or ashes or crumbs or whatever it would be, the people would find themselves just sitting there, like sitting in that place where something that they used to have, they don't have anymore, but they're in the place. Or something that they loved is not there and available, so they sit there and just kind of, oh man, I miss that. Well, we're not too different than that. Whenever we bury our loved ones, and then we find ourselves at the gravesite, sitting there, talking to them. Or if you have ever had a catastrophe at your home, maybe it has burned, or a flood, or some windstorm, like there's a sense of a grievance just to stand there and look around.
Yeah, and we were talking in our life group about this, about how people respond to kind of devastating news. And somebody mentioned shock. Somebody sitting on the front row said shock. And we talked a little bit about that. Well, somebody on the back row thought they said shop.
Which
and
is
I was like,
also,
well, that's also true,
that
right?
Also true.
But it did. It led to kind of a conversation of just how when we hear really, really bad news, you know, sometimes we shut down completely and we're almost immobilized and can't even make simple decisions. And then for some people, and you've probably seen it, I know I've seen it, going to someone's house right after maybe they lost a loved one, you may have someone that is going all over the house cleaning up and trying to cook a meal and things, and it's their loved one that they, but that's their way in that moment of dealing with it.
And copes so, differently.
Yeah. Everybody kind of has a different response to that loss, to that grief.
But I would say, going back to this, I would say cultures outside of our own, being 21st century Mississippi, even that, there are other cultures who grieve really well.
Yeah.
I would say we're not one of them.
We're not. No.
We grieve very poorly. And we find
more in a push through mode.
Yeah, look, we're fine. We're good. And then what happens though, and we find ourselves weeks down the line and all the wheels are coming off the wagon and in our mind, we're like, no, this can't be true. I'm going to pull myself up by my bootstraps. It's not going to get – it's like if you don't take the time to grieve, it's going to destroy
God
you.
God has wired us to do that, and when we try to bypass it, it tends to sneak back up on
That's
us.
That's exactly right, and I think this is a beautiful picture of a better grieving model that they would just sit and sackcloth and ashes, like even just what they would take off of them or put on themselves to understand that this is such a serious grievance of life. Yeah. And to be fair, they would do this if this were bad news for a loved one. Mm-hmm. This was bad news for them. Mm-hmm. Like for Mordecai, he wasn't grieving for Esther necessarily or his cousin down the street or his friends down the road. He's grieving for everyone and himself. Yeah. And so essentially, he's dressed and grieving if he's at a funeral. At his own funeral, and so what a strange place to be in. Like knowing, in theory, you have an expiration date just stamped on you. There's a day coming that's circled on the map that you and all of the people like you are going to be wiped off the face of the earth. At least that's what the bad guys think. But Mordecai, we'll get to it in a minute. Mordecai knew something different, although he didn't know how it was going to unfold. He knew a truth that he was able to anchor to even in the grief.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that for a minute because, so we see in chapter 4, like verses 12 through 14-ish, we see Mordecai talk about, how this confidence that deliverance is going to rise from someplace. Mm-hmm. Where did that confidence come from? And how would he have known that? Mm.
Yeah, well, ultimately it comes from the promises of God, right? So yesterday we went back and read the original promise in Genesis 12, and that was the promise that God makes to Abram. And it was a promise essentially of wherever you go, I'm going to go with you. And those who bless you, I'm going to bless them. And those who curse you or try to kill you, I'm going to curse and I'm going to kill them. Mm-hmm. So he knew that in theory. But certainly there was, how is this going to actually manifest? How's it going to practice itself out here? Yeah. He does make that statement, I think, is an incredibly bold statement as he's speaking to Esther. Don't think to yourself that since you're here in the king's palace, you're going to escape more than the other Jews. For if you keep silent, deliverance is going to rise for these Jews in another place. Mm. Well, Mordecai knows the promise of God is the Jews will always have a remnant. There will always be a line because he doesn't know this, but Christ is going to come from the Jews, right? Mm-hmm. So that remnant will always be, essentially, in this moment, he is just clinging to truth, even though he doesn't understand what he sees.
Which is an interesting, when you think about the mourning, on the one hand, he's mourning because for him— And likely for Esther in his mind at that point, we're about to die. Our family's about to die. Yet there's this bigger picture of the Jewish people are going to survive. God has this sovereign plan, and this is not going to shake his plan. But it still may be the end for us. And so you've got the mourning on the one hand and the hope for the future on the other hand all mixed into this one chapter.
Yeah, that's really interesting too because and it just reminds me of like we can come to God with our real, true, honest selves, and I think there we can be hopeful and trust in God's plan and promise while at the same time grieving the situations that we might find ourselves in. Yeah.
Grieving, but not as those who have no hope.
Right.
He has a hope. The hope in this case just happens to be for the Jewish people more so than it is for him personally.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and I think there's a piece of that. you made mention that Mordecai's faith bolsters Esther's. And so in the same sense, so we see, yes, promises of God, but we also see some other contemporaries that are claiming, like they're going, hey, we know there's a remnant. We know there's a deliverance that's coming. You've got Ezra, you've got Jeremiah. So you have and you have an exodus of people from Babylon, Persia,
right,
that have made it back to Jerusalem. There's all sorts of scenarios, I think, in Mordecai's mind that, hey, I know God's going to do
something. I don't know how he's going to do it.
Yeah. I don't know if it's going to be us.
Right.
So there's all these contemporaries. So once again, you not only see Mordecai bolstering Esther's faith, but I think you see multiple contemporaries and God's prophets that are reminding each other and God's people, hey, God's up to something. He's going to do something. He's going to preserve a remnant.
Yes.
And so,
as we linger here just a little bit longer, I think if I had another opportunity to preach this passage again, I think I would bring this idea up. But since we are just kind of coming up with it on the fly, we'll see how it actually goes. It feels like today, like in our world that we live in today, this Christian world, where everything is so individualized in the sense that we believe that the promises of God are for us. Mm. Now, hear me out. Not the collective us, the personal us.
Right.
So therefore, if I believe that and I'm claiming that promise, and I'm using air quotes when I say claim that promise, when I'm claiming that promise, therefore God is going to give me that deliverance that he gave to Daniel in the lion's den, or he's going to give me that deliverance that he gave to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, because God's promises are faithful and true. Well, here's kind of the truth of it, even going back to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Like, they essentially said, like, we know God can.
Yeah.
I just don't know if he will. And either way, I'm not going to bow
even
down.
Even if he does not.
Mm-hmm. Not bowing down. That's right. And I think where the world in which we live in today, the individualized Christianity, and in some ways can lend itself to be a false or at least a false thread in a very genuine Christianity, to believe that God can only be faithful if God gives you exactly what you want, when you want it, and how you want it. So it's almost like God's Burger King, right? So your way right away. But here, what we are seeing is Mordecai essentially saying, we know he is going to be faithful. We may die, and if we die, he's still faithful. But if we live, he's still faithful. So me living or dying has nothing to do with God's faithfulness. It's everything to do, now this gets into a whole other thing, with our obedience and our walking in boldness. Again, I don't think this gets into my theology, like personal theology, talking about making it personal. I don't think that they're walking in obedience. Like God, I don't believe that God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit are sitting in heaven saying, what's Mordecai and Esther going to do if they go left dead, if they go right live? What are they going to do? We're watching. Oh, they went right. Great job, guys. We're so proud of you from heaven. I think there's a sovereignty of God knows our days before we were even created, right? But still, yet still, if they would have died, it would have not made God any less faithful than because they lived.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think we've got to remember that as we read the Bible and we want to say instead of the collective us, we want it to make it the individual us. If God to be faithful, then he needs to give me what he gave David, what he gave Daniel, what he gave all those. Well, New Testament, all the apostles died horribly.
Right.
God's faithful. God's good.
Good point.
It's interesting, too, because we kind of see, maybe something like that, too, in Esther when she went into to the king on behalf of the Jews. I mean, essentially, and she knows, hey, I'm not supposed to come in here unless I'm summoned.
Right.
Yet, I'm going to do it and suffer the consequences if that's what, if that's what happens. And I think that's really interesting too, because last week we kind of talked about, I think we asked the question, like, is it ever okay to, break the law of the land? We talked about it in the context of missions, how sometimes we go overseas and you do things that, are not legal there. And so, if we go and we do that and we get caught, and we have to suffer the consequences, mm-hmm. is God still faithful?
That's right. Yeah, mm. yeah, because she said, I know it's the law. She had a greater good that she was trying to accomplish.
Right.
But she still knew it was the law. So I'm going to go and I'm going to do this. I'm going to break the law, and then whatever happens, happens. Yeah. But I've got to do this anyway.
I accept the consequences.
Right,
yeah.
exactly.
Of my actions, right.
We were once in Southeast Asia, and we were having a Bible study, which you should not have had in a small little apartment there, and had to station a sentinel person who could watch out as we were having Bible study. And it, you know, I was breaking the law. For me, the worst thing that could happen is that they would say, go back to the U.S. Don't come back. But for the national Christians, it was a different conversation. Mm-hmm. So it was really easy for me to say, oh, the worst thing they're going to do is put me on a plane and I'll go home. Disappointing, but not life-threatening, not job-threatening, not security-threatening. Mm. That just compelled me to ask those questions. Mm. What would I do in that situation?
Yeah.
I hope I would just throw myself on the faithfulness of God and just trust.
Mm-hmm.
I hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we see. I want to go back to verse 14 again, because we see where Mordecai sends this message to Esther, and one of the things he says to her is, "Who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" And I think it says something about. Like for me, as I just kind of reflected on that, it raises question and really causes us to think deeply about God's sovereignty. Like, do we believe that? Like that God often puts us in places, maybe situations that we don't want to be in or that are uncomfortable for us, but yet He does it with a purpose in mind. And again, He's still faithful.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, I can just say there have been lots of times, you know, when I found myself in seasons or in places or situations where, and maybe even some that I felt called to, yet I did not want to be there, you know, or they were really uncomfortable and even painful, and yet, you know, trusting that God has a purpose in it, and for whatever season that's my purpose.
Yeah.
It's a really, I think it's a really interesting thought and I think challenges, and maybe it's all kind of tied to what we've just been talking about, that, you know, do we really believe God's faithful even in the hard things?
And then he's sovereign. And then obviously in their situation, you've got this huge deal going on, this life and death thing. But I think it applies for every aspect of our life. If God is sovereign, we believe He is, then any situation I'm in, work situation, sitting in a waiting room in a doctor's office, talking to my neighbor, whatever, I think it is right to say, okay, God, You have placed me here at this moment, and I am to bring You glory in all that I do. So what does that look like right now in this situation? And sometimes I think it's the simple stuff. It's almost like we're waiting for Him to do that, put us in that big championship game, and He's like, "Hey, just go
right,
just be faithful
learn
in
to dribble the basketball, right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah,
hmm. yeah." Well, we've got just a few more minutes here, but Beth, I want to go to you because you raised a question, or maybe not even a question, but. But an observation, you know, where Esther's response was, she encouraged everyone to fast and to, and so what does that say? What kind of example does that set for us? Talk to us about that in your question.
Yeah, let me give our listeners verse 16 is where she gives the action to Mordecai. Go gather all the Jews to be found in Susa and hold a fast on my behalf. And when it says fast, we know fast and prayer, those two went together. And do not eat or drink for 3 days, night and day. I and my young women will also fast as you do. Then I will go to the king, though it's against the law. And if I perish, I perish. And I thought about personally, like when I face not drastic situations like you're about to die, but hard situations, you know, that's often not my first response. Mm. But then as we were sitting here talking, I'm actually meeting some friends tonight to pray with another friend whose daughter is in a difficult situation. And she called us and she said, I want y'all to come tonight at 6 and pray with me. Mm. Pray in my house, pray over my house. And it was just like, it reminded me of Esther. And I thought, oh, I want to be more like this friend of mine and be like Esther too. I want to have that initial response that says, let me ask people around me, being vulnerable, not something I love to do when I have a hard time, ask those people around me to fast and pray as well as I do. I want to have that response for sure. Yeah. So that was real life-giving to me on Sunday.
Well, we're just about out of time, and we didn't even get to the whole gallows topic.
Thank goodness.
We will come back up. It'll certainly
come back up.
I'm going to say the guys love the gallows talk.
Well, you know, it's pretty intense.
Yeah. Dramatic.
So I think your picture of the 75-foot high gallows, and the illustration of how high the ceiling was.
Did everybody start looking when
they
said that?
Like,
I know.
Can you imagine basically double that?
Yeah.
So anyway,
wow.
Really enjoying this series. I think I said it last week, but it's a different kind of series, right? It's just different because you know it's not.
I love it.
Doesn't explicitly talk about God and all that, and so, but it's kind of fun to navigate these discussions.
Mm-hmm.
So, always good being in this room with you guys on this podcast. And Chase, you have a word.
Dwell songs featuring Aaron Williams.
Oh, dwell.
Abide.
There you go.
There you go.
Love it.
So there you go. Back
Aaron
to the
Williams.
Full circle.
Isn't that the guy from Stained?
Yes, but also not the same guy.
Okay.
All right. Well, now we have our answer, and the one we raised at the very beginning of this podcast.
I think it's Aaron Lewis.
So
I think you're right.
Yeah, I think it's Aaron Lewis.
Anyway, great talk, guys, and enjoy doing life with you.
Love you guys.
You too.
This has been a production of Broadmoor Baptist Church. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with others and don't forget to subscribe. To help us spread the word, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe as well. They can find us wherever they prefer to get their podcasts. And if you'd like more information about Broadmoor, please visit our website at broadmoor.org or connect with us on your favorite social media platform where we're listed as @mybroadmoor. Thanks for listening.